This is Patty Daniels. I'm the executive producer of Vermont Edition, and you're listening to today's podcast. This episode has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. If you've ever been startled by a turkey in a tree, it's a terrifying experience. I mean, turkeys are not particularly terrifying, but at least for me, I kind of sometimes forget that they actually roost in trees. And if I'm walking in the forest at dusk or dawn and my clunky footwork disturbs one and it starts flapping down to the ground, it totally freaks me out. It's like some winged creature of death is descending upon me. Wild turkeys are basically a different species from their butterball cousins that you find in the grocery store, and they are wily. Also, they were completely gone from our landscape just 50 years ago. The repopulation of wild turkeys in Vermont is a conservation success story, and today we're going to learn a little bit more about these birds and about how they came back to Vermont. I'm joined now by Doug Blodgett, wildlife biologist for the Vermont Department of Fish and Wildlife. Hi, Doug. Nice to have you back on the show.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So I imagine you don't get startled by the turkeys the way I do. I forget about them.
No, not so much. Not really.
So 50 years ago, we had no wild turkeys. There was no getting scared in the woods by a wild turkey in a tree. What happened that we lost all of our turkeys?
Well, let's see. We got to go back. Actually, we started out in Vermont in colonial times. We actually did have a resident population. It was much smaller than today's. And they occupied just the southern four counties of Vermont. Up the Connecticut River, as well as Bennington and Rutland counties. But with the influx of the settlers, there was a pretty major shift in land use that really was put a lot of stress on the turkey population. So there was massive amounts of land clearing for the potash industry, for sheep farming here in Vermont. And basically, we went from a really almost essentially entirely forested state to about maybe 25% of Vermont remaining in forest statewide. And since wild turkeys are really a creature of the forest for the most part, they really couldn't sustain that kind of massive land use change. So it was a very dramatic change for a bird that's dependent on the forest. And basically when that habitat was removed in a relatively sudden period, really it couldn't sustain the birds any longer. That, along with some unregulated harvests at the time, are really what did the birds in. So that was about around the 1860s or so when the last birds were extirpated from the state of Vermont.
Wow, so it was 100 years between when the last birds were were in Vermont and the reintroduction of turkeys?
Right. So you scroll ahead now to about the 1950s or so, and some well-meaning sportsmen's groups thought it would be a good idea if we had wild turkeys again back in the state of Vermont. So at that time, they took pen-raised turkeys, essentially kind of domestic turkeys, and just kind of let them go and kind of said, there you go and prosper. But since they were pen-raised birds, they had no survival skills. They were not hardy birds at all and didn't have the wild, wily skills of what we know now to be Vermont's wild turkeys. It just didn't work. So that was the first attempt. And then about 1969, one of my predecessors, biologist in Vermont, Bill Drake, kind of looked around and took a look and gauged the resurgence of the forest land of Vermont after a period of farm abandonment, and thought conditions were right and Vermont's forests had matured to the extent that perhaps we could support turkeys once again in Vermont. His great idea was to go and get some wild birds. Actually, he trapped some out of the state of New York, from Steuben County, I believe, in New York. And for 2 years, in the winter of 1969 and the winter of 1970, Bill released 31 birds, as you said in the intro. The first year, I think there were 17 birds released in the town of Pollitt. And in 1970, there were another 14 birds, I believe, released in Hubbardston. And that really is essentially the breeding stock for all of the turkeys that we have today, essentially statewide in Vermont. And as you said, it's estimated population of about 55,000. So
is that healthy? Is it okay that they all came from those 31 birds?
Well, that's a really good question. And I pondered that for quite a while. And we did look into that a little bit. We did some genetic analysis, and I found that, it, you know, despite the fact that you would think there'd be a bottleneck there, it really, the diversity, genetic diversity in our, inherent in our population now really didn't reflect a real bottleneck. So it didn't seem to be an issue. But regardless, since those early days when we had the 31 birds, they absolutely flourished in Vermont. They hit the ground running. Obviously, the habitat was really good for them, and they flourished. So in about 1973, this continues the story, we felt like the population expanded to somewhere between 500 to 600 birds. And at that time, they were expanding, but were sort of hemmed in by the Green Mountain chain to the east. And so another predecessor, second biologist, Jeff Wallen, really took it upon himself to begin a trap and transfer effort, we call it, where we went into areas that were well-established with turkeys, again, primarily in Rutland County, and we did live trapping caught a whole mess of birds and started doing trap and transfer operations throughout the state. And I think at that time, between 1973 and, say, mid-1980s, I would say, we did some 17 or 20 releases of wild birds in other parts of the state, heading up the Champlain Valley all the way up to Franklin County, and also on the western side of the state. I think the most northerly release site was in the town of Sharon.
Which is still pretty far south, and yet now there are wild turkeys in the Northeast Kingdom. And is it true that biologists didn't even think that wild turkeys could survive in the harsh winters of the NEK?
Oh, for sure. I mean, the birds really surprised us. Initially, the expanse far exceeded our original expectations. We would have thought we'd had success if we were able to successfully recolonize, again, the original range, which was in the four southern counties, Bennington, Rutland, Windham, Windsor. But Vermont's habitat was such that they were able to exploit, really, Vermont's pervasive agriculture and dairy farms. And the birds have really learned very well how to exploit that habitat, particularly in the wintertime. And it's really because of that kind of agricultural landscape that was spread throughout the state of Vermont that allowed the birds to exploit that habitat and do very, very well in areas that we just would not have thought they would have survived. Even when I first started in as the biologist in 1990, I just never dreamed that they would have that kind of success in some really, at the time we thought were limiting, the limiting factor was deep snow. But because they were so able to exploit that habitat, they just did really, really well. And now the Northeast Kingdom is just, wow, it's just, there are turkeys everywhere. I would have never dreamed it as a kid.
KT in Saxton's River says, my yard is wild turkey central. A few have been coming and going regularly for the last bunch of years, but I have had the same gang of 30 plus now for 2 years. KT says, I know it's the same group because one of the females has a distinctive limp. I've looked at her with binoculars and one foot appears to be twisted as if improperly healed from a break. I love having them around, and over the last 2 years, a few of them have become much less skittish. I can be outside in the yard working, and if I'm quiet, they'll continue to forage without running away. It's also quite entertaining during mating season. The males are a riot. I'm so glad they've made such a successful comeback to our region. And Paul posted a note with several questions for you, Doug, and I'll give you a couple of them. He says, how well do the turkeys hold up during winter months, and where do they go in the winter, and what do they eat? And then what other animals do turkeys compete with for food, and what is their most common predator other than humans?
Well, let's see. We can start with where do turkeys go in the winter. So they pretty much stay in the landscape there because of the restriction of deeper snows, their range does become restricted, and it may be down to fairly small areas, but this is when they really flock up, and this is when people really start driving around and seeing, you know, flocks of turkeys numbering from maybe a dozen, perhaps, to, gosh, up to, you know, maybe 70 birds or so. So they're very gregarious, and they tend to do that very easily, especially in the wintertime. So they're a little more confined. So turkeys are great generalists. Their diet is very, very much diverse and very varied. And they are taking advantage, in the wintertime at least, of whatever they can glean, either by digging through some snow, so seeds on the forest floor, acorns, beech nuts, anything they can get at. As the snow deepens, they are attracted to sensitive fern, which are the dark spores that you might see just peeking up above the snow level. And they'll take pretty good advantage of those. They also visit seep areas where the water kind of seeps and percolates to the surface, and those are relatively snow-free areas or certainly less depths, and they'll pick around in there for seeds and maybe some insects. But they're excellent generalists. And then when things get really tough in the winter, as you mentioned, Jane, they do roost at night, but when the weather gets really tough, they tend to go to the cover of softwood trees, either a large dominant pine or a large dominant hemlock, and they kind of sit up there and roost and try to eke out some really rough weather, whether we're having a storm. They'll just kind of sit up in there and try to utilize that softwood as some buffering from some tough weather conditions. And actually, depending on the length of that tough period, maybe a storm, they may stay in that roost for several days. I remember some days after some really tough storms in, I think it was the early 90s, I think I watched a particular flock in Pollet, I believe, and those poor birds were trying to eke out that really tough winter. And they spent, I think, 5 days at least. I don't think I saw them leave that hemlock tree that they were roosted in. Things were that tough. The snow was really, really deep, about 4 feet deep, lots of powder, and they just can't handle that. They really can't. So they prefer then, in those cases, to stay up in the hemlocks and just eke out those storms up there as conditions allow, and particularly in this case, as the snow settles and can provide some structure for them to that support their weight. Then they are fairly good at getting around and exploiting these, you know, seeds and plant crops. Another species that we see them using is hop hornbeam seed. That's a very persistent seed that hangs on well into the winter and yet tends to drop on the snow in the wintertime and on the top of the snow and allows turkeys to access that as well.
You know, Paul asked what other animals do turkeys compete with for food, and Tom in Charlotte wants to know if partridge and grouse populations are affected by the wild turkey populations.
No, I wouldn't say that at all. I really think that really comes down more to a habitat issue. So we know that grouse are really tied into very early succession habitat, seedling sapling habitat, and that's what really provides the basis for a really healthy, robust grouse population. Whereas wild turkeys are much more of a mature forest bird. Now, I don't mean that exclusively. It's not just exclusively dependent on mature forests, but from those they get things like acorns and beech nuts. And they'll utilize those a lot in the fall, scratching on the forest floor. And obviously, the more of that rich fat source they can put on, the better they'll be prepared for the winter, which allows them to go up into a hemlock tree and survive for, you know, a week, maybe even 2 weeks of extended, you know, deprivation, because they have prepared their bodies in that way. And that's not to say that there aren't some foods that both species utilize, but In terms of habitat difference, there's kind of a different response there.
Well, let's take a note here from Scott in Cambridge, Massachusetts, who says the wild turkey population is rising in other parts of New England as well. There are so many in Cambridge, Massachusetts, that I've probably seen more in the past 6 years here than I did in over 40 years living in rural Vermont. They frequently stop traffic crossing the streets. And, you know, I have seen a bunch of pictures actually from Cambridge this year too, Doug. I mean, turkeys are not that particular, it seems, about whether they're living in a suburban, rural, or in the case of Cambridge, a fairly urban environment.
Yeah, you're right, Jane. I mean, I agree. Again, as a kid or young guy, I would have just never thought we'd have seen something like that. I mean, I grew up in South Burlington. And again, if you'd have told me, you know, 35 years ago that we'd have wild turkeys, you know, strolling around the environs of South Burlington, I just really wouldn't have believed it. But yeah, so they seem to be adapting. They're certainly very capable of getting around. They're highly mobile and cover a lot of ground in a day. And as long as they're not discouraged from an area, then they're gonna find something there that they can utilize, and they'll exploit that.
You know, Doug, people often see now, as you said, regardless of what kind of environment. I mean, I live in northern Addison County, and I see tons of turkeys. And then I see them on my drive all the way up close to VPR's headquarters in Colchester. And in fact, we used to have a flock that lived behind us here at the VPR headquarters in Colchester. So people see these turkeys in the fields or by the roadside, sometimes by the highway. And it would seem almost like hunting turkeys is maybe just slightly more difficult than shooting fish in a barrel. But it's really actually not that easy. The turkeys are wily.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, it you certainly could get that impression from driving around and seeing them close to the road or you know, just strolling around nonchalantly. But I'll tell you, when you're out there in the spring and you're really matching, I hate to say this, but you're kind of matching wits with a bird that doesn't have a very big brain.
It's like the size of a pea, right?
About that size, yeah. And they can make you look pretty foolish and pretty stupid. And they are extremely wily. They're extremely aware. All of their senses are alert and awake and up when you're hunting them and trying to call them in. They come in most of the time. They come in very cautiously, and they are studying every angle. Their vision is excellent. They can pick up a great deal of detail in just a very short period of time. They detect movement. It's just amazing. So it is not that easy to lure these birds in. And again, just strolling around watching turkeys and seeing them in the fields everywhere, which is really great. I mean, people get such a kick out of that. And it's just so great that's here in Vermont, and we have the habitat to support them. But it's a different deal when you're hunting them, that's for sure.
Yeah, I have to say, I love seeing them too. And as you know, I grew up in the 80s, and I don't actually remember seeing turkeys in Vermont in the 80s, but boy, do you see them now. Let's go to Chris, who's calling in from Wallingford. Hi, Chris, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
My question, actually, first, let me just tell you one thing quick. Which is that when I was a kid, they released turkeys on my grandparents' farm in Paulett. So I have a fond recollection of this. That was in the early 70s. But my question is, and you mentioned a little bit about turkeys being everywhere in New England now, Cambridge, Mass., for instance. Were those originated from the turkeys that were released in Paulett and Hubbardston, or are there separate releases in different states?
Yeah, good question, Chris. We had something to do with that. In about mid-1970s or so, we did supply 60 or so birds to our northeastern states here, Delaware, Maine, Connecticut, Massachusetts. We also supplied hardy Vermont birds, which were requested, to West Germany, Ontario. So we helped to seed in a bunch of other states' bird population. So yeah, you're right. I'm not sure if they came exactly from Pollitt. They might have come from some other place, but they certainly came from good old Vermont stock. You bet.
Let's go to Victor in Concord, Vermont. Hi, Victor.
Good job by you folks, Doug. I always thought the turkey just came back naturally. I never realized it was a planned thing, and you did a good job with that.
Well, thanks
that
a lot.
Leads to my
That's
next
nice.
Question is, I've been thinking if turkeys can make it, then why can't ringneck pheasants? Because they basically, as far as I know, feed similarly. And, of course, the ringneck, the cockbird, makes that two-beat sound that you hear. I grew up with it, and I haven't heard it for a long time. And actually, the other thing, you can buy ringneck pheasants, and I was thinking about getting – they're not expensive. I would just get 100 of them and then let them go in the fall, but I was told that there might be some restrictions on doing that.
All right, so ringnecked pheasants, Doug.
Yeah, well, we're talking about two different species here. Pheasants are not turkeys, and turkeys
right.
are extremely hardy and obviously pretty well adapted to Vermont's habitat. And that's not the same for pheasant. Those are not native to our state, and their habitat preferences are quite a bit different. So their reliance... First, the winters tend to be kind of tough for them. The snows get kind of deep. Not always. Every once in a while when we have more of an easier winter, some of the private releases maybe down in the southern part of the state may have a few survivors, but they really don't do very well, and they don't seem to overwinter well. There are a couple exceptions to that, but for the most part, it's not really a bird that's suited to a heavily forested state like Vermont.
And we have a call from Elliot in Sutton, Quebec. Hi, Elliot. You're on the air.
How you doing, guys?
Hi.
So I have a ski cabin around 800, 900 feet altitude on the other side of the border in Bromississqua. And I'd like to know if our population migrated up from Vermont or it was introduced. And what's the upper limit of altitude for them to inhabit?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because actually we can take all the credit for whatever birds wandered from northern Vermont that actually did wander across the border and now have an established population on the north side of U.S. border in Canada. And those folks didn't have to lift a finger. I don't know. I didn't get any formal thanks, but we'll take all the credit for that. So, indeed, they basically expanded across the border into southern parts of Canada. And the northern limit, again, in the old days, we thought the snow depths were limiting, and indeed they are. So at some point, when the snow just stays on the ground too long for too long a time and is too deep, and doesn't have the structure to support them, that's when they just can't deal with that. Again, the birds are highly mobile, and again, if the snow structure is such that it can support them and the birds can actually be mobile, then they're very good at exploiting whatever food sources may be around. But when you have deep powder snow that they get bogged down in and they're slogging through, they just don't do well with that. And that's when we start seeing birds drop out of the picture for sure.
Doug, before we let you go, as we were talking earlier, there are about 55,000 turkeys or so now in Vermont, and that's way more than there were in the 1700s and 1800s. Have we reached population saturation?
Well, it appears we have, Jane. I would say, you know, we're pretty much at the top end here. And again, it's just so great to be living in a state that can actually, you know, support this kind of population. I mean, again, as we said, that lots of people really revel in being able to see this kind of photo in the morning, for example, with the sun's coming up and you have some turkeys out in the field or in the side yard. It's just such a great thrill, and we're really glad that we played a part in reintroducing those birds back in the state of Vermont.
Doug, you've said that a couple of times, so you seem to really like having turkeys here, like just personally.
Well, I do. I'm so glad that we are able to reintroduce these species. It's not the only reintroduction we've done. We've had other successes. But I'll tell you a real quick story, Jane. So my grandpappy was around, my great-grandpappy was around to see the demise of the wild turkey population in Vermont, probably in the 1860s or so. And I also know that my grandfather was still alive when we did the first reintroductions back in Vermont in 1969-70. And then while I was trapping and transferring birds around the state of Vermont, my dad volunteered along with my son. He was 7 or 8 years old, and they helped me to redistribute turkeys in Vermont. So I have very fond memories of that, and they were good, cheap help, and it was great, just great.
That's Doug Blodgett, wildlife biologist for the Vermont Department of Fish and Wildlife. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.